This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello, everybody. We're going to start this week with an article titled Greek Revival, Modern Athens Savors Its Connections to Antiquity While Reappraising Its Past, by Tony Perodet. 2,500 years after it was built, the Parthenon is still among the first places tourists go when they arrive in Athens. The first golden age of Athenian tourism occurred around 435 BC, when culture lovers from around the Greek world flocked to the city at the peak of its glory. It was an unforgettable travel experience. After arriving by sea at the port of Peraeus, wide-eyed ancient sightseers would walk the 4 miles along defensive walls to central Agora, the market square where illustrious philosophers like Socrates debated. Young athletes worked out beneath marble colonnades. Mathematicians drew their geometric theorems in the sand, and splendid temples were crowded with ravishing artworks by the world's most talented sculptors. Travelers rushed to the houses of historical celebrities, the grave of lawgiver Solon, and the supposed resting place of the mythic hero Oedipus. The main attraction, however, was to ascend on foot to the Panathenaic Way up the steep flanks of the Acropolis, the soaring sacred rock, which was crowned with the newly completed Parthenon, considered the most perfectly proportioned structure on earth. There they might attend one of the theatrical performances for which Athens was justly famous, for its dramatists had invented tragedy, comedy, and choral poetry. In Athens today, centuries can dissolve in the blink of an eye, as I found on a recent summer's evening when I set off on foot along the same Panathenaic Way, with a stream of modern Greek culture lovers. Every step was an echo of ancient tradition. Climbing to the Acropolis, I passed serene olive groves with sweeping views of the Agora, where the near-intact temple of Hephaestus... Okay, you clearly have figured out Greek is not my thing. All right, still rises, thanks to blasts of the Etesian winds. I could see the blue Aegean sparkling on the horizon. My destination was the Odeon of Herodes Atticus, a majestic 4,680-seat amphitheater on the Acropolis' southwest side, named after the arts patron who funded its construction. The audience members all edged along narrow rows of the steep semicircle to take their limestone seats, which were thankfully softened by thin pillows. On the night's playbill was Euripides' tragedy, Bacchae, spelled B-A-C-C-H-A-E, which had premiered in 405 B.C. at the Theater of Dionysus, a stone's throw away when it won first prize in the annual theater festival. Now, 2,400-odd years later, the play was performed in Greek, with projected English translations and modern sound and lighting systems. But otherwise, there was a rich sense of continuity. Like the original Athenian audience, we watched in fascination as the god Dionysus came down to earth to visit the women of Thebes, who had taken up his secret Bacchic rites in the nearby mountains. The tragedy unfolds inexorably as the arrogant king Pentheus infiltrates the sacred female ceremonies in disguise, but is discovered and torn limb from limb by the delirious and ecstatic celebrants, who, it turns out, include his own mother and aunts. Leaving the theater afterward, we all looked in wonder at the Parthenon hovering above and the moonlit city below. I could only agree with the classic travelers who felt that Athens' exquisite natural setting was matched by the harmony of its man-made adornments. As the Athenian comic poet Lysippus proudly declared around 400 BC, if you've never seen Athens, your brain's a morass. If you've seen it and weren't entranced, you're an ass. If you've left without regrets, your head's solid brass. For me, watching the live performance was a pleasing connection to antiquity. It was also a serene way to experience the Acropolis, which has become so jam-packed with tourists that in September of 2023, their numbers had to be limited to 20,000 per day. But a night at the amphitheater is not the only unexpected gateway to the past. A fresh energy is evident in Athens today, allowing the ancient and modern worlds to interact in creative ways. There is a new sensitivity to how archaeological finds are being saved and presented, said Paul Cartledge, an ancient Greek historian emeritus at the University of Cambridge, pointing to the array of innovative showcases for the city's historic treasures in the pipeline. The National Archaeological Museum has been home since 1889 to many of the finest artistic masterpieces of the ancient world, including a bronze statue of Zeus or Poseidon, and the so-called Mask of Agamemnon, made from beaten gold. In 2023, it announced a $300 million expansion designed by Pritzker Prize-winning architect David Chipperfield and Greek firm Tombazis, adding around 200,000 square feet of exhibition space and lush gardens. Plans were also approved in 2023 for a striking invisible, and that's in quotes, museum devoted to the history of Athens, where underground galleries will blend with verdant parkland to revive the rundown inner city area, Academia Platonos, or Plato's Academy. And to the fascination for the classical world ripples through society in unexpected ways. There are now museums and subway stations. Ancient aqueducts are being repurposed, and Athenians are drawing on the past for inspiration in art, gastronomy, even massage therapy. At the same time, historians are looking more critically at ancient Athenian society and culture, offering a less worshipful and more complex understanding of both their genius and their faults. As a base for exploring our changing attitudes about ancient Athenians, I checked into the Grand Bretagne, Bretagne, the favorite hotel for visiting Hellenophiles since it opened in 1874. When Athens had been chosen as the capital of Greece four decades earlier, the country won its independence after four centuries of Ottoman rule in 1832. It was barely larger than a village, with 2,500 inhabitants, a shadow of its classical peak of 300,000. To remedy this, the Greek government embarked on excavations and a building program, erecting grandiose public edifices, museums, and a university in the neoclassical style. The palatial Grand Bretagne accommodated foreign admirers, many of them Britons, inspired by romantic poets like Lord Byron and Percy Shelley. And it still rises like a marble-sheathed temple over Syntagma Square, the official heart of the modern city. My gilded room was adorned with evocative 19th-century engravings, Greek urns, overgrown ruins, images of the gods and heroes. And from the balcony, I could watch the Sunday changing of the guard outside the Hellenic Parliament, with the soldiers marching in traditional pom-pom shoes past classical-style statues. It was only in the 1950s that Athens exploded in size, with internal migrants flooding in from the Greek countryside and islands to create sprawling suburbs bristling with TV antennas and electricity wires, as well as notoriously gridlocked traffic. The new building methods created a collision between the ancient and modern cities, with developers damaging archaeological sites in the breakneck push for expansion. When I first visited 25 years ago to research my books on the ancient world, Athens was a chaotic and exhausting place where most visitors stayed for a night or two before beating a hasty retreat to island beaches. But in the 2004 Olympics brought radical improvements, with new highways easing traffic and pedestrian-only areas growing around historic cities and sites. Today, despite ongoing economic pain since the 2010 debt crisis brought rioters into the streets, Athens is recreating itself as one of Europe's most energetic cities, where past and present coexist in ways that once seemed impossible. My first stop was the most unlikely new museum, and that's in quotes, in Athens, a subway station called Dimotico Theatro, or Municipal Theater, more than 50 feet underground. It's located in Piraeus, the port of Athens, where ancient travelers would often arrive and where the Athenian fleet was built and birthed in the days of Pericles to rule the empire. Today, it's a gritty industrial area and hub for shipping and ferries, where trendy restaurants and warehouses sit alongside art galleries and nautical machinery shops. 20 minutes from downtown, I joined throngs of rush hour commuters as they followed subterranean tunnels through Dimotico's gleaming chrome and blue interior. Surrounding us on all sides was a permanent exhibition called Tales of Invisible Water, displaying objects unearthed during construction related to Athens and ancient hydrologic system, including the imposing carved stone remains of below-ground aqueducts and bell-shaped cisterns. Under glass, beneath our feet, there were foundations of a villa from the 4th century BC, complete with floor mosaics and softly lit domestic water tanks and amphoras. Inaugurated in the late 2022, the Metro Museum in Piraeus is the largest phase of the subway project that began in 1992 and has become the city's largest and most fertile archaeological dig. Athens is one of Europe's oldest cities, and the sheer density of material evidence is mind-boggling. You're dealing with a city whose site has been occupied since Neolithic times and built on continuously, says Florentina Fragopoulou, a scientific collaborator at the Acropolis Museum. It's a paradise for archaeologists and visitors, where you can see the strata of everyday life for the millennia. Almost every time a spade is put into the earth, a trove of relics is revealed. Fragopolo said, for example, one of the city's most striking contemporary structurary was erected on the site of an ancient cemetery that was in use from the 8th to 4th centuries BC. When construction work began in 2012, the private company brought in a team of archaeologists, including her, in 2013 for 12 months. In that time, they unearthed and cataloged hundreds of artifacts from the site and placed them safely in storage. The metro system has been even more fruitful. Since excavation began in 1992, some 50,000 artifacts have come to light. Apart from the new Piraeus stop, several subway stations, including the central hub Syntagma itself, display the finds and exhibits that are now a casually accepted part of the urban fabric. But while the ancient infrastructure in Piraeus subway is only for display, another section of the water system is being put to practical use. To explore it, I returned to central Athens and climbed the steep streets into the upscale Kolonaki neighborhood below Lysabettus Hill, the city's highest point, to meet George Sachinis, Director of Strategy and Innovation for EYDAP, the Athens Water Supply and Sewerage Company. We were joined by Lynette Witter, a Columbia University architecture expert who specializes in sustainable environmental building, and two members of Urban Dig, an Athenian group that hosts cultural events in historic sites. Sachinis, a wiry engineer in khaki work clothes, led us down steps into a cavernous, empty reservoir chamber whose arched roof was being strengthened. Before us gaped the carved stone entrance of Hadrian's aqueduct, about 5 feet high and 3 feet wide. We put on hard hats and climbed a ladder to enter, using our iPhones to light the way as we crouched through the barrel-vaulted tunnel. It was a different technological approach to what we imagine as a Roman aqueduct, explained Witter. It was an invisible water supply, unlike the heroic arched versions. Built in the 2nd century AD as part of the Roman Emperor Hadrian's renovation of the city, he was a devoted Hellenophile. The aqueduct starts in the mountains above Athens, some 100 feet higher than Agora, and is replenished along its 12-mile route by some 400 bore wells. It was such a fine piece of engineering that it remained one of the main water sources for Athens until 1931, when a new aqueduct was built with the help of New York engineers. By then, the groundwater for Hadrian's aqueduct was becoming contaminated because Athens had no effective sewage system, and it soon fell into disuse. The 200 million gallons of water passing through it daily are simply flushed out to sea, a terrible waste in a city parched by the Mediterranean Sea. We tried to use the water for irrigation in the 1980s, says Sachinis, but all the plants in the parks died. The sewerage system was finally improved in the 90s, and today the water is relatively clean, he said, with biomembranes and UV treatments to purify it further. With European Union funding, the EYDAP plans to redistribute water in 10 spots along the aqueducts route, many in poor areas that lack parks. With climate change, urban heating is a huge problem in Athens, he said. We need these green projects to bring shade and cool. Meanwhile, Urban Dig is inviting artists to increase community involvement. It plans to use the reservoir as a venue for theatrical events and as a digital canvas where images about its history can be projected on the walls and ceilings. It will also be connected with another ancient water tank to create a new plaza called Reservoir Square, with underground galleries and cultural centers. For centuries, Hadrian's Aqueduct was a major water source for the city. Athenians used antiquity in their daily lives. Now we're revisiting it for the new urban needs of the 21st century. If the aqueduct is a hidden 21st century site, the Acropolis is at the opposite extreme. As one of the Mediterranean's most visible attractions, every renovation or alteration is the subject of furious debate. In 2021, paving over part of the plateau's surface with concrete to make it more accessible to disabled visitors was decried by many scholars as Disneyfication. Thanks to its popularity, timing a visit by day is a delicate art. When I revisited, I went late in the afternoon via the lesser-known secondary entrance by the pedestrian street Dionysiou Areopagitou, where the crowds were magically thin. In the relative serenity, it was easy to imagine the excitement of the classical Greek travelers who rushed to the hallowed site. The Parthenon's friezes were then colorfully painted, and the temple was presided over by a colossal statue of the warrior goddess Athena, whose gold helmet glinted in the sun. To appreciate the many pagan shrines and relics that crowned the site, these pioneer tourists consulted guidebook scrolls, hired learned guides called pirogadi, or leaders around, and exegeti, explainers, and even paid artists to dash off souvenir portraits with the Parthenon in the background. They still did selfies then. Today, the plateau is uncluttered in a way that would have surprised the ancients. The Acropolis as we see it now is not as it was, but a modern creation, Cartledge had explained when I spoke to him before my visit. When the Greeks became independent in 1832, they wanted to see themselves as